At the beginning of the session, I induced a panic attack by having her breathe as deeply and as fast as she could for a couple of minutes. This is called hyperventilation. It leads to an increase of oxygen in the blood and creates physical sensations like lightheadedness and tingling fingers. If you're prone to panic attacks, you may suddenly feel like you're on the verge of death. To intensify the effect, I told Terry to focus on the kinds of negative thoughts she usually had during a panic attack. I said, "Notice that your chest is starting to feel tight, your fingers are tingling, and you feel like you can't breathe deeply enough. Imagine that your fingers and lips are turning blue because you're not getting enough air into your lungs. Your windpipe is closing off, and we're going to have to call for an ambulance. Imagine that your heartbeat is getting weaker and more erratic, and you're on the verge of a massive heart attack." Sure enough, these statements triggered an overwhelming panic attack. Terry began sobbing and blurted out that her chest was hurting and she felt like she was about to die. I asked, "What would you die from? A lack of oxygen in your blood?" She said, "Yes, I feel dizzy and my fingers are tingling. I can't breathe deeply enough. My chest hurts so much. This feels so awful, and this always happens." I asked Terry how strongly she believed that she couldn't breathe deeply enough and was about to die on a scale of 0% to 100%. She blurted out, 100%. Then I said, "Terry, if you really couldn't breathe right now and you were having a heart attack, what would be one thing you could not do?" Terry was so agitated that she could barely comprehend my question. She started sobbing and begged me to stop. She seemed so overwhelmed with terror that I was tempted to stop out of a sense of compassion. But I felt like it would be a huge mistake, because it would reinforce her illogical belief that she was actually in danger. I said, "Terry, if you were dying of a heart attack right now, and if you were suffocating, do you think you could exercise strenuously?" She said it would be impossible because she wouldn't be able to get any oxygen into her lungs. She said that if she even tried to stand up, she'd pass out or something. And she pleaded with me to stop. She said that her chest hurt so badly that she felt like she was about to die. I said, "I can see that this is very frightening to you, but I want you to stick with it. I'd like you to stand up right now so we can see if you're about to pass out. Then you can try some strenuous exercise, like running in place, so we can find out if you can't breathe properly or you're about to die." You might think this was a risky suggestion. What if Terry actually did pass out when she tried to stand up? But remember, depression and anxiety result from distorted thoughts. Terry is fooling herself in some very profound way when she tells herself that she's about to pass out or die. From a medical perspective, fainting occurs when the heart slows down and the blood pressure drops. As a result, the heart can't pump enough blood and oxygen up to the brain. Is Terry in any danger of fainting? Has her heart slowed down? Has her blood pressure fallen? Is there too little oxygen in her blood? In fact, Terry's heart is racing, and her blood is loaded with oxygen. Terry cannot faint, even if she tries. Terry stood up slowly and didn't faint. I encouraged her to start jogging in place so she could test her belief that she was having a heart attack. She started jogging very slowly, saying she felt ridiculous. I told her that it might be worth doing something ridiculous if we could put an end to her misery once and for all. She kept ruminating about her symptoms and said, "My fingers are tingling. I feel weird. I feel like I can't breathe deeply enough." I said, "Just keep going. Can you jog a little faster?" Terry sped up and started jogging more energetically. After a couple of minutes, she stopped and said she was too tired to continue and still was having trouble taking a deep breath. I said, "Why don't you try a few jumping jacks?" She said she couldn't possibly do any jumping jacks because she was too exhausted. I said, Why don't you try a few jumping jacks anyway? Terry reluctantly started doing jumping jacks. She soon found her second wind and started doing them with gusto. After another minute, she asked, I wonder if I could really be doing this if I was having a heart attack. I said, good point. Is this what you see in the emergency rooms of hospitals? Patients with massive heart attacks standing next to their gurneys doing jumping jacks? Terry suddenly started giggling. So I said, keep up the jumping jacks. I'm sure you'll keel over at any moment. Then she started laughing so hard that she doubled over. I asked her how much she now believed that she was about to die of a heart attack. She exclaimed, much less. In fact, I feel a whole lot better now. That was the first relief that Terry had experienced in over 10 years of suffering. With Terry's permission, I've shown a videotape of that segment in workshops I've conducted all over the country. At the beginning of the segment, you can see Terry sobbing in sheer panic. 6 minutes later, she's giggling and totally free of any feelings of anxiety or depression. Terry felt better the moment she asked, I wonder if I could really be doing this if I was having a heart attack. She suddenly realized that her negative thoughts couldn't possibly be valid, and the feelings of panic and helplessness vanished. This is the idea behind cognitive therapy. When you change the way you think, you can change the way you feel. Some people get the wrong idea and conclude that the aerobic exercise did the trick and that jogging would be a good cure for anxiety and depression. But that would be missing the point entirely. Exercise can definitely have physical and emotional benefits, but the experimental technique was the real key to Terry's recovery. That session happened in 1988. I called her last summer to see if it was okay to keep showing the videotape of her session in my workshops. She said she hoped every anxious person in the United States would have the chance to see it. She was still feeling tremendous and had experienced only one panic attack since that session. It disappeared quickly when she did her jumping jacks. She proudly told me that after she had her fifth child, she'd taken up writing and had just published her first novel. Many therapists might have concluded that Terry was going to be a difficult case. She'd failed to respond to all kinds of medications and had received lots of psychotherapy that wasn't effective. And yet, she recovered in just a few sessions once we found the technique that worked for her. In fact, I'm convinced that if someone had shown Terry how to use the experimental technique 10 years earlier when she had her first panic attack, she would have recovered immediately and wouldn't have had to suffer for so long. I used to conduct cognitive therapy groups in the inpatient unit of the Stanford University Hospital as part of my volunteer work for the medical school. The patients were suffering from the most severe forms of anxiety, depression, eating disorders, and addictions. At the beginning of each group, they often wept and expressed overwhelming feelings of hopelessness, worthlessness, panic, or frustration. Most had been in therapy for years and taken many medications without success. We used daily mood logs and attacked the patient's negative, self-critical thoughts with the same techniques that you're learning to use in this book. Patients frequently experienced significant improvement right before our eyes, and sometimes their symptoms disappeared completely. Toward the end of the groups, the patients and I often ended up giggling uncontrollably for several minutes. Some of the most joyous and memorable experiences of my career have involved laughing and giggling with my patients. The same is true in teaching. In my workshops, we usually spend lots of time laughing. Whenever the audience and I giggle a lot, I know we've got a great workshop going. Laughter teaches us something that words can only allude to. When you're laughing, you suddenly stop taking yourself so seriously and can see the absurdity of the fears or feelings of self-doubt that have intimidated you for so long. The laughter delivers a message of self-acceptance as well as acceptance of others. Although the most memorable laughter occurs spontaneously during therapy sessions, three techniques intentionally capitalize on humor: shame attacking exercises, paradoxical magnification, and humorous imaging.